This is an ABC podcast.
This is Pacific Beach on ABC Radio Australia. Today we'll have more on the coronavirus as authorities around the world try to contain the threat, including in the Pacific. Also coming up, officials in PNG are worried about another viral disease, but this one threatens the highly revered animal, the pig, rather than humans.
The mortality can be very high, even up to 100%. And considering PNG's close cultural association with pig, that's a very significant disaster if it happens in PNG.
For more on that story and much more coming up here on Pacific Beach. Good morning, I'm Catherine Grau. Well, the World Health Organization has, in the last hour or so, delayed its decision until tomorrow over whether it will declare a global health emergency as the coronavirus continues to spread. It comes as at least 17 people are now confirmed dead from the virus as governments around the world are continuing to act to try and contain it from spreading further. In the Chinese city of Wuhan, which was the source of the outbreak, they've announced they're closing its transport network today, essentially putting the city in partial lockdown. Meanwhile, Australian authorities in Sydney are starting to screen people arriving on flights from Wuhan today. And in the Pacific as well, authorities are taking action. PNG and Fiji are ramping up their health surveillance teams, while New Caledonia is using thermal cameras at its airport to detect any suspected cases. There are also fears over the dozens of students from the Pacific region who are currently studying in Wuhan and their potential exposure to what is now confirmed as a deadly virus. For more on this, I'm joined by our reporter Priyanka Srinivasan. So Priyanka, there are fears the virus could eventually possibly spread even to the Pacific.
Yes, there are some concerns. First, because of the high number of tourists that visit the region from China, and because of the Pacific people currently in the country. Now, the World Health Organization has, in the last hour or so, announced that they will postpone the decision to call the coronavirus a global health emergency, as was done with Ebola and swine flu. That would then dictate the type of global response that would be taken. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said physicians need more information.
Today, there was an excellent discussion during committee meeting. But it was also clear that to proceed, we need more information.
That was WHO Director General there. Now, WHO will reconvene tomorrow in Geneva, which is tonight our time, to come to that decision on the virus. But it hasn't stopped leaders in the Pacific to take action. Border security and biohealth security teams have been ramped up in several Pacific countries. In Fiji, for example, health teams are being strengthened on the border. They consider the virus a low-risk threat to the country. Fiji's Health Minister, Ifirame Wangainabeta, has said the government is trying to learn from its experience with the recent measles outbreak in the region to deal with this coronavirus threat.
We're now seeing measles behind us, and that's the same way we'll approach this. If we have any concerns in any stage, we will let the nation know. At this point, we think that the risks are low. We want to keep it that way. We also understand that there are Fijian citizens in Wuhan province. And already the discussions are happening at the official level from us and also the Minister of Foreign Affairs, about how do we strategically deal with this. And so, we're leaving no stones unturned in making sure that, we look at comprehensively what needs to be done.
Fiji's Health Minister, Dr. Wangainabeta there. Now, there are Pacific Islanders currently in China, as you mentioned, Catherine, particularly students who are studying in Wuhan province. That's the epicenter of where this outbreak is. And it's a place that welcomes many international students. The Fiji Embassy in Beijing says it's monitoring the situation and updating Fijians there. We understand that other embassies from Pacific countries like Vanuatu and PNG are also doing the same. I spoke to a couple of students from Vanuatu who are currently studying in Wuhan, like Harry Abong. He's a law student there, and he says that though the virus is contained, he believes, to a different district, he has been asked to wear masks and stay where he's staying, so he is still a bit worried.
I'm a bit worried. But right now I'm just taking measures, you know, like staying indoors, don't go out that much. So, and yeah, it's actually getting worrisome.
That's Harry Ebong there, law student in Wuhan province. He says the students there are getting regular updates from the university, embassy and health officials who've told them not to panic and to take necessary precautions. And that's the same thing that's being said by Marian Taramolilu. She's also a student from Vanuatu studying in Wuhan. She says she and other students are safe and taking all the necessary precautions.
Since the virus is becoming more serious here in Wuhan, of course, I'm a bit nervous and afraid, but so far, I'm just following the health instructions by the authorities here in the school, just to make sure that I'm safe and I'm not affected. Actually, so far, I'm just, I believe everything is okay.
That's Marian Taramolilu there. She's a Vanuatu student currently in Wuhan. She says that she's been told if they feel sick or if anyone has any symptoms, they have been told to go straight to the hospital.
All right, but otherwise they say they are at this stage safe and feel protected from the virus. Priyanka, given particularly the WHO has now had its emergency committee meet, and of course we're seeing nations right around the world, including the Pacific, ramp up their screening methods, there is considered to be a real risk that this may develop into something much more serious.
Yes, exactly. The virus has spread to other provinces in China, including places like Beijing, Shanghai, Hong Kong, and also to other countries like the United States, Thailand, South Korea. And in Wuhan itself, there are stories emerging of overcrowded hospitals and suspicious deaths that aren't covered in that official toll of at least 17 now. As I mentioned, and as you mentioned, WHO has postponed that decision to declare an international emergency. But one expert, Peter Horby from the University of Oxford in the UK, believes this outbreak does qualify as an international public health emergency.
The question is this an extraordinary event? I think it is. It's unusual. This is, you know, it's been 18 years since SARS, and this is looking, there's many similarities to SARS in terms of, you know, a big outbreak in China with lots of people hospitalised and some indications of international spread. Is it of international concern? Definitely. There's cases being found in other countries. And is an international response needed? I think it is, because we need to better understand the disease, we need to better understand the virus, and we need to develop vaccines and treatments.
That is Professor Peter Horby there, and our reporter Priyanka Srinivasan bringing us up that update. Of course, we will at the ABC continue to bring developments on this story, and particularly on the program tomorrow, whether the WHO does make a decision whether to declare that this is a global health emergency and what that might mean for both the Pacific and further abroad. We'll continue to follow those developments for you. Well, meanwhile, in PNG, authorities there are worried about another viral disease as well, but this one threatens the highly revered animal, the pig, rather than humans. It's the African swine fever, and it continues to sweep the world, killing millions of wild and domestic pigs. It is already in Indonesia and Timor-Leste, and now there is a real risk it could make its way to PNG, meaning there are grave fears about the impact it could have in a country where the pig is a central part of many cultural ceremonies such as marriage or settling conflict. As our PNG correspondent Natalie Whiting reports, though, PNG authorities have admitted they need a lot more money to adequately ramp up their response to it.
This Port Moresby soccer team is celebrating after a convincing win in their grand final. At an event to congratulate the champions, there are two pigs on the menu. One's been roasted and presented whole, the other's been cooked traditionally in the ground in what's called a mumu. Edward Inau has organised the celebration.
Pig is something very important to Papua New Guineans, which we share. We normally have feasts, we always kill a pig.
Pigs play a vital role in Papua New Guinea's culture, economy and community. They're regularly exchanged when settling conflicts between tribes, before people are married, to honour a guest or mark an occasion. Which is why officials in the country are so worried about African swine fever. Dr. Elagi Puana is the country's chief veterinary officer.
The mortality can be very high, even up to 100%. And considering PNG's close cultural association with pig, that's a very significant disaster if it happens in PNG.
African swine fever is already thought to have killed a quarter of the world's pigs. An international team from the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization has visited PNG to help it prepare. Maria Romano travelled from the FAO's base in Rome as part of the delegation.
So the fact that this disease right now is spreading very rapidly is and should be a continued concern.
A team from Australia has also helped with awareness, education and preparation. But Dr. Puana says an extra 18 million kina, or almost $8 million, is needed to fund detection and response programs.
We don't have enough funding. We just submitted a budget request to the government.
If the disease arrives, it will not only affect the availability of food, but could create social upheaval and security problems. Chief Quarantine Officer Andy Yombo says in villages, many people will raise a pig for a year and then sell it in order to pay for their children's school fees.
Somebody in high school might not continue to go to school, you know. So there's a lot of repercussions.
Back at the soccer presentation, Edward Inau can't fathom something killing the country's pigs.
It would have a very drastic effect on the events that take place in Papua New Guinea.
With a high likelihood of the disease arriving, plans to protect pig populations will be vital.
That is our PNG correspondent Natalie Whiting reporting.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
The discovery of an overturned boat in Solomon Islands with 9 people, including children, now missing at sea. It's reignited the debate about making sea travel safer. It comes as school holidays come to an end right across the Pacific when many students travel from the outer islands back to school and by boat. But what can Pacific governments do when the regulations are either weak or the laws that are there often aren't enforced? As Evan Wasuka reports, one maritime expert believes that safety at sea is actually an economic dilemma and something that regulations alone can't fix.
With the Christmas break over, students across the region are heading back to school. For many, this means travel by sea, whether by ship or by small open fiberglass boats. But sea travel and recent bad weather has had tragic consequences in Solomon Islands. Police Superintendent Russell Tagini says 9 people are missing after attempting to make a 100-kilometre open ocean trip from Western Province to Choiseul Province.
Until now, 9 bodies were not found, except the boat has been found in Kia, which is Isabel, in adjacent to Choiseul, with the OBM still attached to the boat, and the boat was found upside down.
The tragedy has reignited the debate about the need to regulate travel by outboard motorboats, or OBMs as they're commonly called across the region. Benjamin Afuga runs one of the largest Facebook groups in Solomon Islands, Yumi Tok Tok Forum.
Right now, it's totally out of control. Anybody can just, you know, drive a OBM, regardless of whether he is normal, he is drunk, is new, you know, not experienced, you know, things like that. It's just, you know, anybody can do whatever they want.
Mr. Afuga says there's been too many deaths and it's time to impose safety regulations.
Those captaining or whatever they call them, you know, driving the boats must be licensed. There must be some standard safety equipments on board OBMs and even the distance.
Improving sea safety is a problem not only restricted to Solomon Islands, and nor is it a new one. University of South Pacific Research Fellow Dr. Peter Natal says authorities and donors have been grappling with it for many decades.
Life jackets, e-burbs, I mean, there's a whole lot of work being done on how to use cell phones, you know, for positioning and also for reporting and also those things. There's a lot of individual safety measures that can be implemented. The question is, how are you going to sustain those over time? And how are you going to make those available to lots and lots of poor people that don't have the money to buy them?
Dr. Natal says regulations are just part of the solution. He says it's more of an economic issue, with the cost of fuel the core of the problem.
Fossil fuel is one of the biggest killers on our ocean at the moment. People going out to sea in open fiberglass punts with an outboard motor with insufficient fuel in case of emergency. And the reason they have insufficient fuel on board is because they can't afford to carry anymore.
With fuel so expensive in the Pacific, Dr. Natal says people rely on smaller, unsafe boats to travel out of necessity.
But until we address the core issue that we have inadequate domestic maritime services that is fossil fuel based and inappropriate for the 21st century, this problem does not go away.
As Solomon Islands police continue their search for those missing at sea, Superintendent Tagini is urging parents to make sure their children travel safely back to school.
The main thing that we try to emphasize is to have a life jacket at least to travel with you.
With Superintendent Russell Tagini from Solomon Islands Police, Evan Wasuka reporting. Well, PNG's national airline, Air New Guinea, has joined a growing list of airlines from around the world to step away from Boeing's 737 MAX jets, with the announcement this week that it is postponing its order of the aircraft until at least the year 2024. It follows moves by Samoa Airways, Virgin Australia and others to cancel or postpone their 737 MAX orders after almost 350 people were killed in two separate crashes of that particular model. And this just this week, Boeing, in fact, announced that it was stopping production of the model completely as it continues to work with the US Federal Aviation Administration. Our reporter Nick Fogarty has taken a look at what all this might mean for air travel in the Pacific. Firstly, Nick, has Air New Guinea given any more detail on the reasons for freezing that deal?
Well, as far as any possible breaches of contract go, Boeing and Air New Guinea have been very tight-lipped, but I spoke to aviation law expert Professor Ron Bartsch, who says it's quite possible that there might be provisions in the contract if Boeing shuts down production. And as you mentioned this week, that did happen. Ron Bartsch says it comes at a difficult time for Air New Guinea because the 737 MAX was fuel-efficient and versatile. It could have been used domestically and internationally. But he says, in terms of the safety of their passengers, it's a good move.
Look, I believe the decision that both Virgin Australia and Air New Guinea taken is very wise and very prudent. There's no guarantee at this stage as to when the production will be recommenced and, in fact, whether or not the 737 MAX will ever fly. And that's the extent to which it's serious. Certification standards are the determinant as to the safety of aircraft when they're put into production. I was actually involved in monitoring the certification process for the Airbus A380 when it came onto the Australian register. And there is an incredible amount of depth of requirements in terms of what the manufacturer has to do and what the regulator has to do in terms of oversighting that certification process. So it very much seems that the regulator is to blame in America as well. The FAA, they seem to have been asleep at the wheel.
That's aviation law expert Professor Ron Bartsch. And this decision by Air New Guinea, of course, follows the decision by Samoa Airways last year, immediately after the fatal crash in Ethiopia, to cancel their order of a single 737 MAX.
All right, thank you. That is our reporter, Nick Fogarty. Well, the former president of Kiribati says the recent landmark UN decision on climate refugees is a major breakthrough in demonstrating the, quote, moral obligation that he says large developed nations have to those countries like his. Now, in that landmark ruling, the UN Human Rights Committee found that it would be unlawful to force climate refugees to return to their home countries. Now, this ruling was centred around the case of a Kiribati man, Ione Tasiota, who'd sought to become the world's first climate refugee. It happened after he was deported by New Zealand in 2015 when he overstayed his work visa there. He'd been challenging that deportation, though, and while this UN committee found that he was not at imminent risk, meaning that he will have to remain in Kiribati, it did find that such claims about climate change refugees may be upheld in future as the impacts of global warming worsen. This is how Mr. Ione responded when he spoke exclusively with Pacific Beach this week.
When we first arrived in Kiribati, we experienced a great difference in our standard of living compared to when we were staying in New Zealand. What's important to me is for big countries to consider the challenges we face with respect to climate change. Personally, I think big countries like New Zealand should accept us and not ignore our plight because our islands are very low-lying and we are vulnerable even to the slightest bad weather or storm surge. So our life here is being affected in one way or another.
Now an outspoken climate activist, the former Kiribati president, Anote Tong, has long argued that his people may in the end be forced to leave their island nation in the face of climate change. So we wondered what he might make of these latest developments. I spoke with the former president earlier on what was, I'm afraid, a scratchy phone line from Kiribati.
Personally, I've had some mixed messages coming from the public and the advocacy that I've been putting forward. I've always acknowledged the eventual, the ultimate possibility that we may have to relocate if we're not able to provide the kind of climate resilience that building that we need to do. And so that's always been an option. The question really is, have we reached a stage when we, where we become desperately in need of migration? I think the answer would be different. There are those that would say no. There are those like Mr. Johan who would say yes. And but I think that basically what is happening is we are experiencing some serious adverse impacts. But those impacts vary from island to island and from wherever you might be. So the attitudes will be different. But at the end of the day, we may have no choice but to relocate.
We'll explore that in a moment. But just to that point that some people feel that they may be experiencing the effects of climate change already, but that it can differ in different locations, but also that it's open to interpretation, I guess. And in this case, the UN Human Rights Committee found that Ione Teisiota's life wasn't at risk in this point in time, in its opinion, but he still argues it is. So how will something like that be provable or determined in future?
I think what Mr. Ione is arguing is absolutely correct in that what the situation is in New Zealand is radically different from what it is here in Kiribati, especially in certain parts of the country. And so by coming back from New Zealand, he is missing whatever the quality of life he might have been able to enjoy in New Zealand. And therefore, if that he believes that poses a threat to himself and his children, I would not argue with it.
But isn't that just about the different living standards? It's a developing Pacific nation compared to a developed country like New Zealand, as opposed to being the specific impacts of climate change.
Yeah, quite apart from the impacts of climate change, the standards of living are different. But, the usual challenges that we face are being exacerbated by the impact of climate change. At this point in time, as I said, it depends what he's been used to with his family and his children and what he's coming back to here in Tarawa. I believe he's in Tarawa, and of course, there's a huge, very high population here in Tarawa, and there are challenges here as well.
Now, this ruling's being hailed as historic because it ruled that states will breach their human rights obligations if they do return someone to danger because of climate change. So, do you expect that there will be more of these legal challenges in future, or even know of any that are planned?
What is happening now with the UN ruling, I think, is so significant in terms of finally making that breakthrough in acknowledging moral and hopefully and the legal obligation of states to provide sanctuary for people who are being very seriously affected by climate change. After all, most of these people come from countries who really have very little contribution to the cause of climate change. And so I've always feared that at the national level, it would be morally, it would be legally unacceptable to do something that's detrimental to your neighbour. But here we are at the international level, we conveniently ignore that. It's, again, part of the issue, the reason that I've always said that climate change is the greatest moral challenge. I mean, right now, we don't see what we're doing on climate change and the impact on other people as morally unjust. Yet, some years ago, apartheid was endorsed by law, slavery was endorsed by law. Now we know we're absolutely wrong. And I think climate change is exactly in the same category.
That is the former Kiribati president, Anote Tong, speaking to me there from Kiribati. Apologies for that scratchy phone line, but important to get his perspective on that landmark UN decision. And if you are interested in taking a read of that story and what happened and getting a little more detail on that, you can find it on the ABC News website. And if you prefer an easier way of getting there, just find and like the ABC Radio Australia Facebook page, because the story has been shared there, along with plenty of other great stories as well. So you should find that really interesting. So make sure if you haven't already, find and like ABC Radio Australia's Facebook page. That's it from me today. You have a great day.